The other day I was talking to a young man who somehow had the idea when we were talking or discussing the firstborn and those who will be in the first resurrection, that that was all there was to it. And he seemed to think that everybody else was lost and so on. Well, the firstborn, of course, actually are the pathfinders. Yahshua is called the firstborn. Yahshua is known as the one that is the firstborn of many brethren in the book of Romans, chapter 8 and verse 29. But to help with that, I've considered maybe we should look what's in the Old Testament, especially as far as what do we do now and how do we reach out to others. What about ourselves? Are we sure that we're on the right track and are we going to stay there? You see, there are a couple of people that we can think of that in the Old Testament, they certainly had everything going for them. Elder Bob mentioned one this morning, and that is Saul. Stood head and shoulders above all the people. He was a good-looking guy, athletic. And yet, when you come to the end of his life, he was out there to try to kill David, a man who was after Yahweh's own heart. And we also have King Solomon. He had everything going for him, the wisest man on the face of the earth. Yet he ended up serving other deities because of his many wives. Scripture told him not to do a number of things, which he did anyway. He was not to gather horses unto himself, which would make, war chariots. The reason being that it's going by man's own power and man's own way of doing things. So there are a number of places that we can look and get good examples. How about some bad examples? Well, that's what I want to talk about. Actually, a man that we look to as being one of the great dominant features in the book of Genesis. In fact, over half of the book of Genesis concerns him. And it's a man that we call Israel today, but he was also known as Jacob. So turn with me, if you will, back to, Genesis chapter 25. So we find that Jacob here is a man that is actually a conniver. And yet Yahweh saw him and knew that he had ability, and he was going to tap onto that ability and improve it and make Jacob one of the great men of the Old Testament. We have here in chapter 25, beginning there with verse 20, that from chapter 25 all the way to 50, it's primarily dealing with Jacob. He was in chapter 25. Notice, we'll kind of skip through here. Chapter 25 and move down to verse 20. And we find Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Paddan Aram, the sister to Laban, the Syrian. It's rather interesting how Yahweh will introduce people like this, Laban, a Syrian. And later on, we find that Jacob actually married his two daughters. We find that in verse 21, Isaac entreated Yahweh for his wife because she was barren, and Yahweh was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived, and the children struggled within her, and she said, "If it be so, why am I thus?" What's going on here? I'm having all kinds of problems. I thought I was supposed to be a mother, and that was going to be a great thing. It isn't working out that way. I don't feel good. I got problems. And so Yahweh said to her in verse 23, "Two nations are in your womb, and the two manner of people shall be separated from your bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other, and the elder shall serve the younger." You know, in the Bible, usually the firstborn was the one that had all the favorable positions. He was given the greater inheritance, and he was expected to be the priest of the family, and he was expected to be a representative of the family. If the father died, he would take over as being the priest, and so on. Well, here we have a man who was not the firstborn, and yet he superseded the one that was supposed to be. And Yahweh knows the heart of people. He knows what we're thinking, our attitudes, and what things we will do. And this has happened here. You notice in verse 24 it says, when her time for delivery came, that there were twins. She had twins in her womb. The first one came out. He was red all over like an hairy garment. And that's why his name is called Esau. And Esau actually means hairy. And we find that there came his brother out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, and his name was called Yaakov. His name means heel grabber. And we find that Isaac was 60 years old when she bare him. So the boys grew. Esau was a cunning hunter. He was a man of the outside, the Marlboro man, you might say. I think I've said that before. And Isaac loved Esau because he was an outdoors man, and he did a lot of hunting, and he also had a recipe for soup and steak that he made when he caught the wild animals out there. Now we find Jacob here in verse 29. He's in the house cooking. He's making soup. He's making pottage. And Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And we find that Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray you, some of the red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore his name was called Edom. And, of course, that means red. So Edom and Esau are the same person, but the name fluctuates between the two of them, between the two names. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day your birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I'm at the point of death. What do I care about my birthright?" In fact, in one of my wife's books that she has on diabetes, one of the doctors there wrote a convincing article saying that Esau probably was diabetic. And this was his problem. He had to eat right away. It's kind of an interesting study. But anyway, Esau wanted to eat right away, and he was just looking for something to eat, and he smelled the pottage that his brother was making. So Jacob said to him, "Swear unto me this day that you will sell me your birthright." And verse 34, Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, that usually is understood to be beans or vegetables, and he did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. What is interesting here is that Jacob here, you'll find, is a conniver. He's always thinking. He's shrewd. In fact, he not only gets his birthright, we'll find a little later that he does more than that. He actually takes away the blessing from his brother, and he becomes despised by his brother. But I want you to notice here in chapter 26 that Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, and so on. He went to the famine on the land. And in verse 2 of chapter 26, he tells Isaac, "Don't go down into Egypt. Sojourn in this land," in verse 3. "I will be with you and will bless you, and unto you and your seed will I give these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swore unto Abraham your father. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries. And in thy seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So here we find something that's a little different. Notice he says, "I will make your seed like the stars of heaven." And again, I think I mentioned this before, but the Bible talks about having seed like the dust of the earth and like the stars of heaven, two separate seeds. And you find that Abraham was even given that back in the 12th chapter of Genesis. He said, "I will make of you a great nation." But from that one promise he gave to Abraham, he expanded that and made it larger and larger and larger, and said that they would someday inherit the earth, the whole world, through Israel, actually. and that is what he plans to do. Anyway, I want to back you up a little bit. Well, let's go ahead instead. Chapter 28, I want to point something out here. In chapter 28, beginning there, skip down to verse 14. And notice here he's talking to Jacob on the ladder. And verse 14 he says, "Your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, and to the north and south. And in thee shall, and in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed." Now he's talking about a physical seed. As we can skip over to chapter 35 and look at verse 11. And you find here is another promise given. But in verse 35, Jacob's name has been changed. And in fact, in verse 10, we'll read about it there. It says, "And Elohim said unto Jacob, Your name is Jacob. Your name shall not be called anymore Yaakov, heel grabber, supplanter, one who deceives people. But in Israel shall be your name." And he called his name Israel. "And Elohim said unto him, I am El Shaddai. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of you, and kings shall come out of your loins. And the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to you will I give it, and to your seed. After thee I will give the land." So here Jacob now is the one that's going to take all the blessings that were given to Abraham. It'll come through him and through his progeny. And of course, as you know, he has 12 sons and also a daughter, Dinah. And we like to have everybody remember those 12 tribes of Israel. And by the way, I might just get into this while I'm thinking about it. We have a bookmark, by the way, for those who are watching the tape. You might be interested in it. It lists the 12 tribes of Israel. And I do think that we have to know who the 12 tribes are. I think we have to educate ourselves and learn these, just like we should learn the books of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. I always think if you don't know the books of the Bible, you don't know where to look for the various things. You might look for Hebrews back in the Old Testament, and it's in the New Testament. It's not in the Old. But the more you can learn and have things at your fingertips, the better scholar you're going to be, and the better things you'll understand. It's almost like trying to type a letter on a typewriter without knowing where the keys are. You don't know where to look. But the 12 tribes, if you want to learn these, you can say them in a real easy way. I just want to get into this a little bit. When I was still in the churches, we were attending a meeting, and every time we came to the meeting, the minister there would make us recite the 12 tribes of Israel. And so I got to learn them. I had to learn them. In fact, he made us stand outside. We couldn't come in the door until we recited in the 12 tribes. And he said them in a kind of a sing-songy way, and it's kind of easy to learn them. In fact, if you need this, we can sure send it out to anybody that's on the Internet, wants to write in and get it. We'll send it to you. But it's Reuben. He was the eldest. And it means, behold, a son. He was a son of Leah. But anyway, the 12 tribes are, and you can say them like this, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin. And you say those over and over to yourself. Put them on your mirror in the bathroom. Every morning when you get up, look at it and say it. When you get that learned, then put up the 12 or the books of the Bible. And every day, say go down, start out with 5, then add 5 more, then add 5 more. By the end of a month, you'll know the books of the Bible by heart. You don't have to look for Hebrews in the Old Testament. You know it's in the New. It takes a while, but it's well worth the effort. Sure recommend it. Anyway, get back to what we're talking about here. Get off my soapbox. In one of the problems here that we find with Jacob is in 2 Kings, I want you to turn there and we'll come back to Genesis. But in 2 Kings, notice verse 8, something here that's kind of interesting. 2 Kings chapter 8, put in there at verse 20. And I think you'll find this is rather an interesting comment. We have here Edom, actually Esau, the brother of Jacob. And it says, in his days, Edom revolted from under the hand of Judah and made a king over themselves. And it says, so then he talks about Joram and over to Zer and all the chariots with him and so on. It says, and smote the Edomites which compassed him about, and the captains of the chariots and the people fled in their tents. Yet Edom revolted under the hand of Judah unto this day. Then Libna revolted at the same time. We find there that Edom was under the jurisdiction of Judah, one of the tribes of Israel. How did that all come about? Well, Edom, you see, was Esau, and Esau was not given the blessings. Esau actually ended up doing the things that he was not supposed to do. Let's see. In Genesis 25, if you want to go back there to, let's see, 25 and 33, well, I guess we covered that, didn't we? Jacob made the deal with Esau that he would sell him his birthright. And Esau despised his birthright. And as a matter of fact, that comes down to us in the New Testament as well. Because we find that the fact that he despised his birthright meant that he didn't believe what Yahweh said was going to happen. So that in the book of Romans, I just want to read that while we're there. In the book in Romans chapter 9, you'll notice here that in verse 12, it is said unto the mother, the elder shall serve the younger. And as it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. The Old Testament isn't as clear as saying that Yahweh hated Esau, but in the New Testament it's very clear. He hated Esau, what Esau stood for. Esau was the eldest, and yet he scorned his birthright and scorned being one of Yahweh's people. And that he today is the father of the Edomites and the Arabs and so on. But anyway, we want to continue here with this. In the book of Genesis again, notice in chapter 27, when Isaac was old and he couldn't see, he called Esau, his eldest son, unto him and said, my son. And he said, behold, here am I. He said, I am old and I know not the day of my death. So he tells him there to go out with your quiver and bow and make sure you get some venison for me and make a meal. This is something I'd like. Excuse me. And the mother overheard that, Rebekah, in verse 6, and she knew what he was doing, and so she said, she tells to Jacob what Isaac had told Esau. Verse 9, she tells Jacob to go out to the goats and take a couple of good kids, bring them in, I'll fix the meal for them, and then we'll try to get you to be the one to get all the blessings. So Jacob kind of argues with her in verse 11 and says, well, how can you do that? Because apparently Esau is very hairy. In fact, almost like an animal. His hair was so thick. And he says, I am a smooth man. In verse 12, he says, my father peradventure will feel me, and I shall be seen to him as a deceiver. And I will have a curse upon me instead of the blessing. And his mother said, upon me be the curse, my son. Only obey my voice. And go fetch me them. And so this is what he does. I want you to notice something here. I don't want to go through the whole thing, but you know what happens through this treachery, or whatever you want to call it. The blessing was given to Jacob and not Esau, even though he pretended he was Esau. But notice what Isaac says to his son. How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? And Isaac says, because Yahweh, your Elohim, he doesn't even admit that he believes in Yahweh. But he says, your mighty one is the one that helped me, which was a lie. And Isaac said to Jacob, come near. I want to feel you, my son. I want to know if you're Esau or not. And Jacob went near, and he felt him, and he said, well, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. One of the Bible says that the mother actually made gloves for Jacob, and he put on gloves, all hairy gloves out of animal skin. And when the father felt his hands, well, he felt all that fur, and so he thought, sure, this must have been Esau. Well, anyway, he wants, verse 25, he isn't quite sold yet. He says to his son, bring it near me, and I will eat my son's venison, that my soul may bless you. And he brought it near to him, and he did eat, and he brought him wine and drink. And the father said, come now and kiss me, my son. And he came and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his raiment. Jacob had even put on his brother's clothes. And he smelled his raiment and blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son is in the smell of the field. And that's why I know that this is Esau. And of course it wasn't. Well, anyway, we find that he no more than eats this and so on. And Jacob leaves and he blesses him. Verse 28, he says, Elohim give you the dew of the heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. Let the people serve you, the nations bow down to you. And let Yahweh be over your brother. Let you be sovereign over your brethren. And let thy mother's sons bow down to you. And cursed be everyone that curses you. And blessed be he that blesses you. That's the same blessing given to Abraham, wasn't it, by Yahweh, back in chapter 12. It came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made a blessing of Jacob, Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, that Esau's brother came in from hunting. And he wants to know what's going on. And father says, who are you? He said, I'm Esau, your son. He said, well, who is this that I just blessed? And so on, in verse 33. He was trembling. He couldn't understand what was going on. And then Jacob said, I've already given my blessing away. He raises the question, well, in verse 34, can't you bless me too? Don't you have more blessings than just one? And so he blessed him anyway. And notice, kind of interesting, the blessing that he gives Esau. And he says, move on down to verse 39. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, behold, your dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and the dew of the heaven from above. And by your sword shall you live, and you shall serve your brother. It shall come to pass that you shall have the dominion, that you shall break the yoke off thy neck. So the reason I had you read the one back in 2 Kings 8 is that finally, that this broke, the yoke was broken back in those days. Some people ask if this is going to be something that's going on today. But 2 Kings says that Esau broke the yoke of Judah, who was ruling over Esau at that time. But anyway, verse 41 says, Esau hated Jacob because of the blessings. The father blessed him, and Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand, and when they're over, I'll kill him. He was going to kill Jacob. And you find that the mother heard that. And so she warns Jacob, you better get out of here and be gone for a while. In verse 43, she says, go to visit my brother Laban, and you stay with him a few days. And then when your brother calms down and gets it out of his system, well, then you can come back. So anyway, this is about what they do. Jacob does leave. But I want you to notice that all the while, Jacob seems to be under Yahweh's surveillance. He's watching over him all the time and taking care of him so he's not killed by his own brother. As we move on down there in the 28th chapter there, here we have the blessing I wanted to mention again. And the blessing is that your seed shall be as the dust of the earth. And you shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the south, and your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Some of the people here don't realize that this was actually, the 28th chapter has to do with Jacob's ladder, where he finally wakes up and realizes that Yahweh's in charge. And let's see. Verse 15, yes, says, I will keep you, and so on and so forth. And then Jacob awaked out of his dream, and he said, surely Yahweh is in this place, and I didn't know it. And he was afraid. He was dreadful in this place. In verse 18, he rose up early in the morning, took the stone that he had put for his pillows, and set it up for a pillar, and poured oil upon the top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. Beit El. Beit is house, El is Elohim. The name of the city was called Luz at first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if Elohim be with me. Now notice he's changed of heart. This dream he had was so severe and so traumatic that it changed his whole thinking. He was scared. He was trembling. And he says, if Elohim will be with me and will keep me in this way, that I go and give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, and so that I come again to my father's house, then shall Yahweh be my Elohim. Before that, he wasn't. I've had people tell me that they've had dreams and they were so scared and frightened that actually they knew that it was some spectacular dream that they've had, and it prompted them to get back to study the Bible some more. I can understand that, because Jacob had the same kind of dream. His attitude was changed. And in the stone way, he's going to use that for Yahweh's house, and all that you says that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. So here we have tithing mentioned way up back here in the book of Genesis by Jacob. Anyway, the history, of course, is of Jacob. He goes to Laban and comes to the town where he lives, and he waters the sheep that Rachel brings down, and he falls in love with Rachel. And verse 18, Jacob, we're in verse 18 of chapter 29. Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve the 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. So Laban here makes an agreement. And the interesting part, in the morning when they get married, he thinks he's got married to Rachel. In verse 25, he finds out it's Leah. And he said to Laban, verse 25, what is this you have done to me? Did not I serve you for Rachel? Wherefore have you beguiled me? Now here's a guy who deceives everybody else. When he gets deceived, well, he yells about it. What's going on? What are you doing this to me for? What have I done to you? But this is the lot of people that do this. Laban said, well, I'll tell you what you do. You work another 7 years for Rachel and you can have her too. So he spends 14 years doing that. And you notice here that he was given both Rachel and Leah at the same time. So he had two wives there right off the bat. Laban gave Rachel his daughter, verse 29, and Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. And he went unto Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and served with him for another 7 years. And so we find that he actually did get Rachel and Leah, but he had to work for doing it. Now notice here with Jacob, in chapter 30 we have the sons being born to them, Reuben and Simeon and Levi and Judah and Dan, Naphtali. And in verse 13 it says, Leah said, "I'm happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed." And she called his name Asher. You can usually tell when you read this what the name means. Asher means blessed or happy. And it could go back up to all of them. But the reason I mention Asher, because I was asked one time what gate, and there are 12 gates, as you probably know, to get into the kingdom. And you have to be going through one of those gates out of the 12. And I was asked, what gate do you want to go through? And I said, well, I'd like to go through the book of, or go through Judah. Because Judah was in the right in the middle of the opening up of the tabernacle. And you had to go through Judah to get there. And the idea, of course, is when you approach Yahweh, you give him praise first. I guess we talked about this a little bit before. You praise Yahweh first to get his attention. And it's usually looked upon as a korban offering. You know, in the days of the ancient worthies here, to get attention from one of authority, you gave him a special present. Usually, maybe a group of people wanted to see him, so you gave him a special present. So when he got the present, he'd look at that and say, "Well, who came with this? What's this for?" And they'd say, "Well, so and so out there gave it to me. And he told me to give it to you right now." "Oh, well, send him in." So he'd come in, you know, because he'd given him a korban offering just to get his attention. And really, when you read the Psalms 100 and verse 4, it says, "Enter into his courts with praise and into his presence with singing." That's why we open up with praises to Yahweh when we have a service. Some people think we ought to open with prayer. Well, then we follow with a prayer and a reading of the Psalms. But the whole idea is that we want to make sure that Yahweh gets praise so that he'll listen to us. And then our prayer then is that the service that we're doing then will be blessed of Yahweh and will be guided. Anyway, I bring this up because I think I should have changed that, because I think when we're there, we could all go in the name of Asher to get into the kingdom, because Asher means glad or happy or blessed. And I think that's the way we would feel when we get into the kingdom. So anyway, the 12 gates are important because they are of Israel. And I think some people don't realize there's not a gate at all there for the Gentiles. Not a one. Not a one that says Christians only. Not a one. They're all tribes of Israel. So you have to be a spiritual Israelite. One that overcomes with the help of El, which is what Israel means. And that's how you get in, by overcoming. In the book of Revelation, the assemblies there in the second and third chapter, every one of them says, "He that overcometh, he that overcometh." All seven of those have to be overcome. Well, anyway, let's get back to what we're talking about here. I want to move on. I'm getting kind of late. The interesting part here is that when Jacob is made the livestock keeper, he is a good livestock man, and his ring-streaked and streaked cattle outnumber those of his father-in-law, Laban. And so he's ready to leave and go home. He's going back again in this 31st chapter. I want you to notice here that verse 1 it says, "He heard the word of Laban's son, saying, 'Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and has that which our father, which was our father's.'" Now he gets all the glory because, you see, he was a livestock keeper, and he had a good flock, and he got to keep all the ring-streaked and all the speckled cattle, and Laban got all the purebred. Well, anything you can think of in the dominant recessive theory of reproduction, that the purebreds are hard to come by sometimes. You have to be very careful. The Jews have been looking for a red heifer for years now, and they don't want any with any black hairs in it or white hairs, only red hairs. And I don't know if they ever found one, but I know they thought they did, and then they found some black hairs in the tail, and they had to discard that one. But anyway, the point is that in verse 2, Jacob was the one that was succeeding, and he had the biggest flock, more than Laban's. And Laban's other children, sons, were angry. Anyway, verse 3, Yahweh said to Jacob, you better get out of here. Return now. Go back to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I'll be with you. So we've, excuse me, Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah and got to go to the field and get the flock. And they said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it was not like it was before. So he says, your father looks angry, but the mighty one of my father has been with me. And he says, you know that with all my power I've served your dad, I've served Laban. And your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. Here's the great deceiver complaining about being deceived. Again. And he said, if the speckle shall be your wages, then all the cattle will be speckled. And if he said, the ring streaked shall be your hire, then all the cattle became ring streaked. So Yahweh was blessing him in his work of growing or taking and managing the cattle. So anyway, notice here, in verse 11, the angel of Yahweh came and spoke unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here am I. And he said, lift up now your eyes and see all the rams that sleep upon the cattle, the ring streaked, speckled and grizzled. For I have seen what Laban has done unto you. I am the El of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you vowed the vow unto me. Now get up and get arise, get out of here. Get from this land and return to the land of your kindred, of your family. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or any inheritance for us in our father's house? Don't we get anything? Are we not counted with of him as strangers? For he has told us, and he has quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which Elohim has taken from our father, that is ours, and our children, and so on. So anyway, they finally make it. But verse 20, we find that Jacob stole away unaware of Laban the Syrian, and he fled that night so that Laban didn't know he was leaving. And he took the, he'd gone, verse 23, 7 days journey. And Laban, we find, was given a dream. And it says, take heed that you speak not to Jacob either, good or bad. In other words, Yahweh tells him, don't talk bad about him, don't do anything like that. And Laban said to Jacob, when he overtook him, verse 26, what have you done? You stolen away unawares. You carried away, my daughters as captives. And you fled secretly. And you know you steal away from me. You didn't even tell me you were going. And verse 28, and you have not suffered me to kiss my sons and daughters. How do I know? And I know now that you've done this foolish thing. So anyway, one of the problems is that he apparently has some deities that he is worried about. And he wants to know what happened to them. So he's trying to find these deities. And he says in verse 32, whoever has these deities, let him not live. Therefore, our brethren, discern you what is yours with me and take it to you. And Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went out to Jacob's tent, and he looks all over, can't find him. And then verse 34 says, now what really happened? Rachel had taken the images and put them in a camel's furniture and sat upon them. And Laban searched the tent and didn't find them. And she said, Father, let it not displease my sovereign. I cannot rise up before you, for it is that time of the month. I just can't get down. So he lets her sit there, and of course she's sitting on those deities. So he can't find them. And rather interesting that Rachel is the one that some of the Bible scholars, commentaries will say maybe Rachel wasn't really converted. And that she wanted those deities for herself to worship. And later on, of course, Jacob makes her throw away all the deities and get rid of them before Esau comes. But anyway, Jacob keeps telling about how much he has really done and helped and everything like that. And as we move on down, I want to mention this other thing that happens, I think is interesting. In verse 42, it says, "Except Elohim, my father, the mighty one of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, had been with me, surely you would have sent me away empty." So Jacob says to Laban, "You're a crook. And if I didn't have my mighty Elohim with me, Yahweh, I would have gone away empty. You'd have kept everything." And he said, "Elohim has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands." And he says, move on down. Verse 43, "And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children. They're all my relatives, they're my grandchildren. And these cattle are my cattle, and all that you see is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children, which have been born? Now, therefore, come, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee." And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made an heap. And they did eat upon the heap. And Laban called it Jager Sahadutha, and Jacob called it Galeed. And Laban said, "This heap is a witness between me and thee." Therefore was the name given, name of it called Galeed. And Mizpah. And Yahweh, well, I want to just stop here a minute. I've had people tell me something about the Mizpah covenant. Actually, the Mizpah covenant is a statement saying, look, we're both a couple of crooks. You and I are both crooks. The way you have to do this thing is to separate and not get back together. And I had somebody write to me and say, "May the Mizpah, Tower of Peace, be on you." And I think, oh boy, it's actually a curse. What it is. Anyway, Mizpah, it says, "For Yahweh watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If you shall afflict my daughters, or if you shall take other wives besides my daughters, no man is with us. See Elohim witness between me and thee." And Laban said to Jacob, "Behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast between me and thee. This heap be a witness, and this pillar be a witness that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you shall not pass over this heap to me for harm. The mighty one of Abraham, the mighty one of Nahor, the mighty one of their father, judge between us." And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. And Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called the brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up, kissed his sons and daughters, and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned to his place. So Jacob continues going on. And here we have where his name is changed in the next chapter, chapter 32. He overcomes. And I want to just touch on this because, notice, Jacob is, in verse 3, he says, "He sent messengers before him to Esau's brother unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom." He wants to know what his brother is doing because he remembers his brother was going to kill him years ago. 20 years ago, he's going to do this. And he commanded them, saying, "Thus shall you speak unto my sovereign Esau. The servant of Jacob has said, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now, and I have oxen, asses, flocks, men servants, women servants, I have sent to tell my sovereign that I may find grace in thy sight." So the messenger came back and they said, "Well, Esau, he's coming and he has 400 men with him." And Jacob gets the idea they're soldiers and they're going to try to kill him, try to catch him. So he was afraid in verse 7 and he was distressed. He divided the people. He gave half and half, one to Leah, the other half to Rachel, divided them up. I don't want to take a lot of time here going through it, but notice here, he makes a prayer, and he says in verse 10, "I am not worthy the least of all these mercies of all the truth which thou have shown unto your servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sand of the sea. So he reminds Yahweh that I'm supposed to have a lot of children, so keep these young people so that they aren't being killed. And these offspring won't be numbered for multitude. Anyway, during this, as for he delivered him, he fell asleep. And he was left alone in verse 24. And there wrestled with him a man with him until the breaking of day. And we find there that he could not prevail against him. We find that it says he touched the hollow of his thigh, of Jacob's thigh, and his thigh was out of joint. And as he wrestled with the angel, and he wouldn't quit, he just didn't give up. And that's what Yahweh was looking for, someone who would not be namby-pamby and change his mind and give up and quit. He wanted somebody who would stick with things. And this is what he found in Jacob. That's what he seemed to appreciate. He touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint. And then he said, let me go, for the day breaks, the angel said. And he said, well, I'll not let you go unless you bless me. And he said, what is your name? He said, Jacob. He said, your name shall be called no more Yaakov, heel grabber, but Israel. For as a prince have you power with Elohim and with men, and you have prevailed. You have overcome. And Jacob said, tell me, what is your name? Well, the angel never tells him what his name is. And he said, wherefore did you ask me of my name? And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen Elohim face to face, and my life is preserved. Well, Jacob's life is rather interesting here, because in 33, Esau comes to visit with him. And Esau talks with him and so on. And they finally separate and become peaceable. There's a lot more we could say about Jacob. Maybe we can continue with that later on. But I want you to think about Jacob. Jacob was a man who was not the firstborn, but he became the firstborn. He was aggressive. He wanted preeminence. He wanted to be the dominant one. And it was only when Yahweh saw that and knew that he would be a better firstborn than Esau, because Esau was one that went with whatever was expedient, whatever was handy, whatever would take. That's all he did. But Jacob, as we find out later, he actually blesses his family, all of the tribes. And he actually has some problems with Judah and so on. But the thing is this. We find that we are also to be a part of the firstborn. And that's what Jacob was. He became the firstborn. I mentioned the question I was asked the other day about why don't we talk more about the firstborn, what they're supposed to be doing. This individual had the idea that the firstborn was a one-time proposition. But the firstborn simply means that the firstborn are the pathfinders, you might say, of a whole new movement. And if we're in the firstborn, there's going to be the secondborn, thirdborn, and so on that come after. And I do believe that the spirit realm is the promise that we're all facing if we're faithful, not only in the firstborn, but the flesh and blood that come up in the second resurrection will also have opportunity given to them. They too can become part of the spirit realm that Yahweh is working with. And there are many universes out there, many constellations that seem to be increasing all the time. You read about that, where they're growing more and more all the time. And yet here we have not only the firstborn has failed at times. We don't want to be like either Solomon or King Saul. But we want to be like David, especially when we find Yahweh's truth and we know the promises he's given us, that we can be the firstborn of many brethren. Yahshua is already the pathfinder. He's already shown us the way. And we're to walk in his steps and follow and do what he asked us to do. And I think that some of the lessons in the Old Testament are, don't be like the ones that failed. Be like the ones that succeed. And look forward to the promises of Yahweh, because they're out of this world. May Yahweh be with you.